This is Phil Rowe on Cambridge 105 Radio.
So with winter still grinding on and not yet letting go, the meteorological winter season ends at midnight, but the astronomical winter season ends on the 20th of March, the so-called the spring equinox. Not so-called, it's very scientific. I thought I'd throw that one in for our guest this morning as a little tonic for the sunny days not too far away, when we all feel better for the rays, the warmth, and for getting out and about to local places with lots of open space and historical interest, like the National Trust's Wimpole Hall. Their events officer is Anne French, who's back with us again for the first time since the new season began there. Morning, Anne.
Good morning, Phil.
Nice to see you. Now, are you across the National Trust, do you open at different times, or is there a set policy? So Anglesey Abbey we have very nearby as well. Might they open and start the season maybe a bit earlier or a bit later than you? Is it down to local decisions?
I think that to some extent it is down to local decisions, because a smaller place, for example, isn't going to have the volume of visitors in the winter to justify it. But I think there's a general move towards being open more days in the year, even if some of that is only partial opening. But I think generally speaking, most places are going to be open by February half term, like fully open. So I think that's the general rule.
You've got to catch the revenue that half term brings you. You don't like to look at it as a commercial organisation, but it is vital that you do sell those tickets. Do you keep statistics, I guess, across the year, the number of ticket sales of children versus adults, for instance, that come into the property?
Yeah, I mean you can. We do have all that information, and you can actually drill down to quite a surprising a degree of accuracy for particular days and times of the year and that sort of thing, which obviously I can't sort of do now, but I think, you know, the general trend is that visitor numbers are increasing hugely everywhere in the National Trust, so which is great, because it's as you say, it's the lifeblood of the organisation. We need that revenue in order to fulfil our core function, which is conservation. But then we need to also find creative ways of balancing conservation needs and access needs.
Even on beaches, where you've not got staff and volunteers, like some of the lovely natural beaches you have, but you probably have a pay and display, so you can just see the number of cars coming and going.
Absolutely, and so that parking revenue is really key. We organise things like the big beach cleans and things like that, and that takes staff time and volunteer expenses and that kind of thing. So I think it would be, you know, people do need to bear that in mind if they're visiting a beach, you know.
Where does Wimpole Hall hold itself in the National League table? Are you able to sort of say, are you one of the major league A-listers when it comes to the National Trust property?
I mean, we are one of the largest and busiest properties. I couldn't, in all honesty, tell you exactly how we compare to everyone else. I'd need to research that information. But certainly, we're up there, you know.
And the great thing is, of course, you've got that vast expanse of open land and fresh air.
Yeah.
Even on a day like this, and as far as you know, anyway, the property's open. The only thing you've suffered from in this inclement weather, we're told that will come up shockingly, we're at -7 overnight tonight.
Yeah.
You've got some frozen pipes issues going on though, Anne.
Yeah, the reason that's only at the farm, so I'd like to say the latest I've heard anyway is that the rest of the property is still open. But if the pipes freeze at the farm, it means that the hand washing facilities don't work, so it simply isn't safe for people to visit the farm, because if you've ever been there, you'll have heard the regular announcements about washing your hands, and that's to prevent people catching things like E. coli, which can be very nasty. So we can't actually let people into the farm if they can't wash their hands.
But children can pet, so in other words...
No, they don't. No, it's
right.
Not that you don't pet animals. But even sort of being in an area where animals are kept, you know, you could still... You know, if you didn't have those hygiene measures in place, you could still pick something up. And also small children, you know, they touch things and they put their fingers in their mouth. You know, it's you need to, that's why we need to be careful.
This will be funny when we're listening to this 6 months down the line in the heat of summer, but you've probably got a farm warden at the moment who's got an ice pick out, probably hacking the ice off the surface of the water troughs so that the cattle and the sheep can get
to
the drink.
I think somebody probably is doing that somewhere, I would guess, yeah.
You have staff that look after the farm, that's paid staff as well as volunteers.
Yes, yeah.
So the house reopened for full access a couple of Saturdays ago. That was the 10th of February. You did have limited opening hours during the winter and, of course, in the lead up to Christmas, which was rather special for you. We described that when you last were with us in January. But now you've been trialling some conservation work, a little bit of a showcase for this season in front of the visitors, something a little extra that you've put on. You've been exploring the architect, Sir John Soane.
Well, that's actually the conservation work demonstrations in front of the visitors was actually during the partial opening, so that there's still something for people to come and see. The exhibition about Sir John Soane has only just opened, really, when the house opened a couple of weeks ago. And that's going to be there for the whole season. So that's, I mean, every year we have an exhibition in the Red Room, as regular visitors will know. And this year it's about Sir John Soane, who, yeah, I mean, he was just this amazing 18th century architect who, he designed the Bank of England. Sadly, you can't see very much of that now. It's been redesigned subsequently. This was back in the 18th century, you know. And, but he, there are things that in the house at Wimpole, like the enormous plunge bath and the yellow drawing room. And then actually, of course, the farm itself were all designed by him.
Plunge bath on a day like this. Can't, can't imagine that. Anyway.
It's not used anymore, but it will. I mean, if it was, I think they did actually, I think they heated the water. I'm not sure, but I couldn't swear to that. But yes, I mean, so he was a very, very interesting person and had a huge influence on Wimpole. So, you know, I'd recommend coming to have a look at that exhibition if you're visiting the house.
He had quite a good working relationship with the third Earl of Hardwick of the house.
Yeah.
And I suppose that's a way that the Earl was able to spend quite a lot of money working with Sir John. What was Sir John Soane's style?
Well, he was all about light and space, so very much, you know, sort of Enlightenment values, but influenced very much by Italian architecture. So he actually met the third Earl while they were both on the grand tour in Italy. And, you know, they were inspired by all the Italian buildings and everything, and that's when the third Earl invited Sir John Soane to come and, you know, design parts of Wimpole.
So very much an Italianesque design.
Yeah, yeah.
Interventions architecturally in places like your yellow drawing room and the bathhouse we've spoken of. And in the garden buildings, like the glass house.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, the glass house as well.
I'm trying to think how you'd probably really put your artistic slant on a glass house. But, of course, we think of Kew Gardens and the wonderful Victorian rounded arch profile that Victorian.
I mean, it's about the symmetry, you know, and so the Georgians were very much into their symmetry and letting in lots of light and elegance, you know. I think, you know, if you see it, you'll realise, because it could actually just be a big rectangle and it might work just as well. I don't know. I'm not an expert in these things, but you can see when you look at it how it's been designed to produce the effect of. I think symmetry is the key thing, actually.
There's some intrigue, isn't there, around every corner in the way that we should just stop and stand and stare, maybe not on a day like this, but just look back and look at things like the glass house that you have there. And also worked on the farm, and the model farm and the great barn.
Yeah.
Now, there was a model farm there then at one time.
Well, it was the model farm. It's the farm as it is now. When it was, the word model farm doesn't mean like a toy.
A miniature.
No, so the farm, the farm as it is, you know, what you see now was originally a model farm in the sense of being an example of good, of new farming practice, so innovation and, you know, so again, that was the fourth Earl who really took a big interest in the agricultural side of things. So that's why it's called a model farm.
And the phrase we probably use today is modern farming practice, I suppose.
Which
back in those days, which is still very much tumbrel and heavy horse.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, there was at one time what was called the Castella d'Acqua, or I translate this as the water castle.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in the parkland at Wimpole.
Yeah, it's... I mean, the castle is probably a, you know, a bit of a...
A folly, shall we say.
It was a... Yeah, maybe a folly, except that it did have a practical purpose because it's where the water was stored. But it's just an ornate building where you would get water from. And yeah, sadly, that's no longer there. But you can see a model of it if you go to the Sir John Soane Museum in London. Which I would say is worth a visit.
So the gardens, they're having a little bit of work done on them, ready for the spring. I'm not sure they'll be out there doing it today, but you're well underway.
Oh, they're quite a hardy lot. They might well be outside.
Well done, the girls and boys out there doing that today. Will that be volunteers as well?
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, actually, that the new path has actually now opened. So it's called the Ash Path, and it's so called because it used to be lined laid with ash from the boilers of the house. We're using wood chip.
Do you know, we used to do that at home.
Really?
We'd riddle out our fire, and my dad would lay the garden path with fresh ash. It would get very sticky on your boots.
But it's probably quite non-slip, isn't it? Might be quite good in weather like this.
But you're using wood chip, which is...
Which is lovely, soft underfoot. And it's the lovely thing about it is that, A, it's a shortcut to the walled garden. So it used to be a service path, which... meant that people could nip backwards and forwards, but it goes along the edge of the parkland, so the border between the gardens and the parkland, where there's a ha-ha, which for people who don't know is a ditch to keep out the cattle. And so when you walk along that path, you get brilliant views of the parkland without actually having to go and find the entrance to the parkland, if you see what I mean. So it's a lovely, lovely new introduction.
And the ha-ha, there are amazing. So many older mansions and stately homes have got these. And as you mentioned there, you've got a dip of the profile, which is down to normally a brick wall, but you cannot see that there's a drop.
The sheep can't,
of course, get into the prize lawn of the mansion.
You can't see the drop until you're quite close by. And I think, so some people think that's where the name came from, that you'd kind of stumble upon it and go, aha, or something like that. or the crueler version is that people would laugh if you fell in by mistake.
I'd say you actually fell low, because sometimes there's something like a 2 metre drop on some of these
things. But I don't think you would fall in, because the whole point is to keep... to sort of be a barrier, but
the capability grounds of the day, not obviously at Wimpole, but some of the design to actually not reveal that this was just effectively a sheep barrier.
It was actually him at Wimpole.
It was capability.
Yeah, in the north of the parkland. So yeah,
and the ha-ha became a little unsafe. Presumably, the brickwork needed some replacing.
Yeah, it's now been made entirely safe. So that's why we've been able to open the path. Yeah.
So that's another new attraction each year. There's something new that happens at Wimpole Hall. I say that the daffodils are out. Well, mine are peeking out at home. I have a few little yellow heads that are now on some of my daffodils. I suppose they've been kind of set back a little bit by what's happened this week. But there's always something to see, really, around the gardens in the winter.
And also lovely winter scents as well. The winter blossoming trees of various kinds with Latin names which I can't remember. But, so there's always interest. I mean, the daffodils are beginning to peak out as well. And we've got snowdrops too, so aconites.
And during half term, did you get a sizeable number of children and mums
and
dads?
Yes. So the pine cone feeding, the activity to make a pine cone bird feeder, was very popular, and that's something that we do quite a lot anyway. So we need, keep an eye out for that on the website. It's a regular activity, but so families would come and just make a bird feeder just using a pine cone, some lard and some bird seeds, and then a piece of string. And it was great.
Did one of you be honest here, Anne, did one of you at the hall come up with this idea, or is this a national trust?
It's actually a national trust thing. I couldn't say who first thought of it, but it's an activity that a lot of people do across the... maybe it's a traditional... Maybe this is the traditional way that people made bird feeders. I don't know.
I think it's a terrific idea, because it's so natural. You're using just a natural resource, a lovely, large pine cone. So, of course, it's got the natural points where... I don't know whether they're called kernels, but obviously...
Well, the bits where you kind of squash in the lard, and then and that's where the seeds. Yes, it's the perfect shape, isn't it?
It's very natural for the birds. They understand what one is. Yeah. They're going to go up to it, and they're going to enjoy themselves. We're running out of time already, but we can talk about the shop at least getting ready for Easter. There are eggs.
There are, there are lots of beautiful Easter-themed things. I mean, we always have fresh eggs from the farm anyway, all year round, which are very popular. But the, you know, we've got pottery, we've got chocolate eggs, sweets, you know, just all sorts of... lots of outdoor stuff as well, now that the spring is here.
Fresh plants as well coming in for heart. Yeah. Well, no, it's not. You've got to wait till midnight there, Anne.
Plants as well, yes, and plants, yeah.
I don't think suddenly it's going to get nice after midnight, but officially that's the meteorological one.
Is it? Oh, good.
So that's what it is. Officially we can talk about. Come in tomorrow. I'm not sure people will be actually talking about spring on the 1st of March.
It is the first day of spring, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see the statistics for the winter in terms of the temperatures we've had and the sort of precipitation. We have. Mm-hmm. I digress because there's lots of new children's ranges in the shop as well.
Yes.
But also, you've had delivery. Now, do you get local plant growers to send in things like the hellebores that you've got?
We source things from a variety of suppliers. I mean, that's very much the retail manager who deals with that. I'm not sure about the plant. I don't know where the plants come from. I mean, That's the retail side of things, but certainly we have relationships with local producers of all sorts of other things. The and pottery, for example, is the potter comes every other Saturday or every third Saturday or something like that, and they actually sell the wares that in person in the stable block, and then the rest of the time that it's on sale in the shop. So that's a very sort of bespoke thing.
They've got a kiln there, does some glazing and fires the pots?
Not actually on site at Wimpole, but it would be good. But I think
there's an idea. For
health and safety, you know, implications there, I think, but with kilns.
And finally, just to wrap up with us today, and for you to wrap up, you are all keeping warm there. Tell me you are, Anne, because I know that your ground source heat pump project's been slightly delayed.
It's been delayed, but it's still definitely going ahead, so we're still very excited about it. But work will now be starting in May, so I'll certainly be able to come and tell you more about that, and perhaps you'd like to come out and see it for yourself.
I think we should. Definitely. So the old boiler, and I'm talking about the boiler in the house. That, fingers crossed, keep going.
Yeah, gosh,
going.
Hope so.
Until the spring. And then you should have new geothermal sources of heat for the autumn
exciting.
And winter next year.
Very exciting, yeah.
Something to talk about next time around. Mm-hmm. And thank you very much for coming in.
No problem.
It's always an interesting, a wonderful roundup of your work as well as the events officer. That's Anne French. She's the events officer for the National Trust at Wimpole Hall. We'll be meeting up again with her probably next month. We'll arrange a date.